We are quickly approaching the end of 2024. And if you have not purchased an investment property yet this year, and it's been one of your goals, I need you to listen very closely. I know many of you live in areas where it's so expensive and investment properties seem impossible. I'm talking about some of the big cities. So LA, New York City, maybe even Seattle, Atlanta, places in Florida, and the list goes on. If you know that where you live is too expensive, I need you to lock in right now. Investing out of state changed my life as somebody living in California. I now invest in Ohio and I'm growing my portfolio. It's something that's possible. You just need the right information and execution. So if that's you, if you want to learn how to invest out of state, go to outofstatemoney.com and there is a free training that'll outline the steps for you and help you understand exactly what it takes. So go to outofstatemoney.com or simply go to the link in the description of this episode.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast, episode 20. The purpose of the Black Real Estate Dialogue is to document the journey of an up-and-coming Black real estate investor and to share the stories of successful Black real estate investors. Shout out to our sponsor, Mint Inc. Mint stands for the Minority Interdisciplinary Networking Team. Mint empowers young minority professionals with an interdisciplinary network for learning, collaboration, and the development of entrepreneurial ventures. You can become a member of their network for free at mintinc-usa.com. You can also follow them on IG at mintinc_USA. A couple of things before we get into the episode. Please don't forget to leave us a rating and a comment and a review. It will help us to reach more people, help us to go up in the rankings and continue to grow our podcasts. We're also on Twitter. You can follow us at Bread Podcast, at BRED Podcast. Take a moment, follow us there. Talk to us throughout the day. We are also accepting show sponsors. So if you're interested in sponsoring a show, send us a DM or email and we can talk through more details. We also hit 3K on IG this past Friday, which is a great milestone. Thank you all so much for your continued support and for sharing and spreading our page and our message. It's really been a great ride. So wouldn't be possible without all of you. And so to celebrate, we're running a huge sale on our merch. You can find the link in our show notes. The sale will be lasting for a limited time, so get your merch while you can. Also, last week, I was part of a real estate investors networking event in downtown LA. I was hosted by me, Jacqueline Sims, who is an agent, episode 2 guest, Charles Oglesby, Eric, who's also known on Instagram as Real Estate Friday out of Detroit, who I had an opportunity to meet for the first time, and he'll be on pretty soon. Had the opportunity to meet Charles for the first time, which was great, and also Mark Jones, who was our episode 16 guest. So it was awesome to meet those brothers in person after talking online for a couple months. And shout out to Jacqueline for organizing the event. She did an excellent job and her vision came to life. We packed the place out and, you know, it was very humbling. Shout out to all of our followers who were present and who I got to meet for the first time. Really can't wait for more events like these. You can follow all of them on IG at todd.capital, at partner with Millie, at Real Estate Friday, at Living Rent Free, and at Jacqueline Sims. Great people doing great work in the real estate game. My business partner and I are actively searching for opportunities in Dayton, Ohio. I know it's been a while since I've talked about Dayton. All is well with my rental. Currently going through my taxes and doing all those things. But I got connected to a real estate agent who happens to be a Black woman through someone I met on Bigger Pockets who invests out there and now lives out in Dayton. And she's been sending us deals. We've been looking at them, analyzing them for ones that fit our criteria. And we found one that we liked. We discovered that the previous deal fell through and there was a price drop. So as the agent investigated, she discovered that there was lead-based paint in the house. And this is something that can be very hazardous if someone is exposed to it, and it can just lead to a lot of issues. And so I just asked her, I'm like, hey, what do you think? I wanted to see what her reaction would be. And she encouraged us to keep looking. You know, she had done a comparative market analysis for other sales within a mile, other rents within a mile. And she did a lot of research for us before finding out about the lead-based paint and before telling us to move on. And so I feel really good about it. And she earned our trust in my book, because if she was greedy, she would just say, make an offer and try to push it through. So I definitely appreciate her for that. But we'll keep y'all posted on how things go over there. We also have multiple resources available from our trusted partners in the show notes that will help you on your journey to real estate investment. Definitely check them out. The best investment is in yourself. And you know, sometimes it's easier to pay someone for their expertise or access their course or ebook or resource to help you avoid making some mistakes. So we have plenty of resources available. Definitely check them out. Lastly, sign up for our email list. By signing up for our email list, you receive special discounts, additional content, our newsletter, which went out a couple weeks ago, and also resources from our partners. Whenever our partners have a sale on a product that I believe will fit our audience and what you all need and can help you on your journey, I send that out as soon as possible to the email list first. And so if you want to be part of it, the link is in our show notes. Definitely sign up for that. Looking forward to this episode with Yenim Holdings. His brother retired at 35 and is working on real estate full time. I know you guys will get a lot out of it. So let's get into it. Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. Very excited about this episode today. With me, I have Dwayne Jordan of Yenim Holdings LLC out of Newburgh, New York. Dwayne, thank you so much for joining today and taking some time to chat with us.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
For sure. So first, we'd like to start the show off with just asking about everyone's background and their childhood. So I'd love to hear more about what your childhood was like and what you saw or maybe what you didn't see that shaped your view of building wealth.
All right, so I know we had spoke a little bit last week, actually, what the Q&A was going to entail, and you gave me that brief dialogue about it. It allowed me to think a little bit, and I actually did a little soul searching to figure out why I actually did have a passion for real estate. So I'm from Staten Island, New York, born in Staten Island University Hospital, actually, and that's where I'm from. I was raised by my two grandparents, my grandmother and my great grandmother, and they're both state. My youngest grandmother was a state worker, my oldest grandmother, stay at home babysitter type, just old school, make the ends meet type middle class people. So part of I guess, the real estate, it was like the American dream. My grandparents, they struggled and did what they had to do so they could purchase a home. And, when I was a kid, I remember, I was like, wow, we got a mansion. Like, this house is humongous. And I drive back to the house now and I'm like, man, put the house in my garage. It's tiny. But, it was like everything to us growing up. Like, we were like the people in the family that actually, got out of the projects and got a house. So, it was a very big deal, to go from, nothing to something and build it,
For sure. And I think it's very interesting just kind of hearing you reflect back on when you were a kid and just that home, what it meant to you. It meant that you were moving to a different level in life. And, I'm sure it had an effect on you back then that carried through to what you're doing now. So it's interesting to kind of hear you take a look back at that.
Yeah. On a deeper level, I was thinking about your line of questioning, and it was so crazy. My grandparents have passed now for some time, and they were like very significant parts of my life. I remember like my youngest grandmother, she used to have me write out the books for the house and balance out the checkbooks, which people don't balance checkbooks anymore. But I remember I was like 9 years old and she would have like a ledger and she'd be like, no, you're responsible to make sure all the numbers line up in the house. And like, that was my first part of business, learning business. And, she used to make me work on my penmanship and she'd be like, people judge you by your writing. And, it was just like a whole lot of little things. But the main thing that I thought about in your questioning was, I remember when I was a kid and my grandmother used to be like, oh, what are you scared of? And as a child, I used to say, I'm scared of being homeless. Right? Now, it was so crazy. I thought about it after you sent me those questions, because I say, on a deeper level, I think I'm so attracted to real estate because it guarantees that I'll never be homeless. Like, so I just buy. I guess it's kind of something you get infatuated with. I really thought about that. I thought about that question. I was like, wow, nobody really asked me, like, why? And I started looking for the why. And I was like, wow, because my grandmother used to say, oh, you know, most children, they're scared of ghosts or they're scared of whatever. I was scared of being homeless. So, which was a very weird fear for a child to have. But and we were never homeless. I guess as an adult, it kind of also fueled me to get into real estate. And I've always taken, like, such a such a view of real estate of like it being security, you know?
For sure. And can you, building off of that, can you give us just an overview? I know you do a lot, you know, we spoke a bit off camera. So can you just give us an overview of, you know, what your company does and what you're into real estate wise?
So my company is, we mostly, well, me, not we, me, it's me. I'm the company owner. Owns multifamily properties. I have a few single families, also have Airbnbs, also out-of-state investor for multifamily. And we also do all of our renovations in-house. When I say we, I'm also saying me. So besides my contractors, those guys work for me. But that's what pretty much what my company is based out of. So it's mostly multifamily, all investments. And the only thing that separates me from the everyday investor is that I have no partners. I have no investors. I use no bank money and I use no hard money. And it's all my own funds. So it's a little bit of a different investment technique. I'm 100% in and I'm a true owner of my company. So
for sure. And what do you think it was, in addition to your childhood, maybe it was that particular experience that made you want to pursue real estate and use it as a path, not only to shelter yourself, but to build wealth?
Well, when I thought about getting into any field other than a conventional employment, and I thought about how would I be able to amass wealth and make money while I'm sleeping? Because in all actuality, I mean, I can work 18-hour days if I want, but for how long? That's not a sustainable lifestyle or any type of business model. And I thought really about every form of business, and the only thing I could come up with was real estate. And when I came up with being a landlord, it worked out. And you know, the deals after, you know, I heard a lot of horror stories, but after acquiring my first property and it being such a, it was a really good experience. I continued on that path. And I mean, you know, one turned to two, turned to three, turned to 24. So.
For sure. So walk us through your first purchase. What did that look like?
Well, the first purchase was horrible because my first purchase, that was the first and the only purchase I ever made that was that I used bank money. I used a 203K rehab, and I knew absolutely nothing about banking. But Google is 100% your friend, and I read a lot of testimonies about people's people's stories and how they went through the closing process like that. And it taught me, I mean, it was a crash course in 203K. I did a streamline, so I didn't need a project manager. So I actually project managed my first build myself also, which was also like, but I had a great group of people from the word go. So it worked out great. Like, honestly, I had a great banker. The contractor met his deadline on point, stayed in budget, did not go over, like every, I mean, it's the, like the golden story, but it was, to me, it was very hectic because I mean, you know, it's the unknown, you know, when you don't do something, when you do something for the first time, it's foreign to you and it seems extremely difficult. Looking back now, I mean, I would take a million of those deals all day over what I deal with now, but, you know, it was a great process. But like I said, I used a 203K rehab on it was a HUD property. It was the first property was a HUD, and we did a streamline under 30K rehab on it, and it was a multifamily, and I was the owner occupant at that property for a while. So that's how I went about that first one.
For sure, for sure. For listeners who may not perhaps be familiar with some of the terms, can you explain what a 203K loan is and also what will be considered a HUD property?
Okay, so it was the 203K mortgage is, it's an item that's offered by certain banks. Not every bank offers it. The lending institution that I went with, they do offer it. And as an option, what it is if you buy a distressed property, you can have it at whatever your purchase price is, and then they incorporate the rehab cost into the purchase price, and it gives you one payment at the end of the month for one, you know, it turns into one mortgage, as opposed to you trying to buy a distressed property and then fix it up on your own. And it also has a lot of safeguards in it that are pretty good for like first time rehabbers, because it pays out contractors on percentages, and all of the contractors that get the bids are bank approved. So they've already been vetted by the bank. So it's a lot of safeguards in there. You know, if the guy decides he's gonna walk off the job halfway through and he's done 50% of the work, he's been paid 50% of the work, he's only been paid for 50% of the work. You still have that other 50% left in your budget to bring someone else in to finish his work. So it really safeguards a lot of first-time investors or just investors in general from being stranded out there, because I'm quite sure everybody's heard the horror stories about contractors walking off jobs or taking too much money up front and never completing the work, and you know, so on and so forth. So,
for sure, for sure. And then, what is a HUD property?
So it was a that property was either a HUD or a home path. It's a government-owned property. It was a government foreclosed property that I had got that was distressed. It was a closed bidding process, which I'm quite sure most HUDs are, where, you know, it's a highest and best by a certain day. Let me break it down layman's terms. So it was like, so there was an open policy for originally first look initiative. So the first 14 days was for owner occupants. And then if they didn't find an owner occupant within the first 14 days, then it went to the market for investors and nonprofits and so on and so forth. I got it as an owner occupant during that first look. And then pretty much, you know, whatever that window was, it closed out and they said, okay, whoever comes with the highest and best wins. I came back with my highest offer and I won the property. And it's closed bid, so you don't know what the person beside you bidded for the property. You just put in yours and just hope for the best.
Sure. Sure. And was that a duplex, that the first one?
Yes, it was a duplex. It was a side by side.
Was that in New York?
Yes, that is. It's actually in Newburgh.
So what was that? So we got kind of what it was like on the rehab side and project managing. What was it like being a first time landlord? Was it what you expected or was it far different?
It was really a lot simpler than I thought it was going to be. Like, you know, honestly, in my head, I had turned it into it was going to be like this paperwork and craziness and this, and it really was. And I didn't know much about interviewing people. I just, you know, was using judgment, and you know, I had like my base stuff that I had Googled and learned about, you know, vetting out tenants. And my first tenants were amazing people. They actually stayed with me until they brought their own home. I taught them how to buy their own house. Like, I literally walked her through the, yeah, my first tenants, I used to go with them to shop homes, and I walked her through her closing process, and she got her house. Cause I was like, you make too much money to rent from me. Your credit's too good. I was like, you need to go buy your own house. Why are you giving me your money? And she ended up getting her own house. So.
Wow, I really like that. I really like that. So it's very interesting. You kind of got some project management experience and dove right into it within the safeguards of the 203K, which was great. And then when you became a landlord, you weren't one of those people who like, I just hope, I mean, everyone hopes people stay forever, no turnover and such, but I think it's really great that you help your tenant move towards building wealth for their own family. And I think it's just great that, you know, you had a good tenant, but you also helped them move on to another part of life and went out of your way to help to walk them through houses and all those things. So I think it's really great that you took it that way. Maybe not a lot, but I'm sure there are probably some landlords who, you know, some people get a little salty when they have to turn over and when people move, but you know, I don't think you lose anything by helping someone move to the next step and being happy for a tenant or whoever when they're moving on to another stage of life.
I think that you never lose out in real estate. There's never going to be a shortage. You know what I mean? A shortage of people looking for places to live. Will the next quality individual be of that same caliber? That's an unknown. But you have to look at it from the point of view of, like, you know, I've always had this belief in real estate that I work for my tenants. That's just how it is. I feel like I produce you with a product and I produce you with a service and you pay me for that service. So, you know, I in turn work for you. I get it. It's my company. I get it. It's my buildings. But this is a people business and you're dealing with personalities and you're dealing with individuals and you're dealing with one of the main factors of people's lives, which is their housing. So, you know, when I'm speaking with people and I'm helping them and I'm trying to work with them, yeah, I sometimes I'm a little bit lenient, and then there's sometimes, you know, you have to be strong. But there's a certain, you know, there's a time and a place for everything, I feel like. But as far as helping people get to the next level, it'll never hurt you to help somebody do better in life. Like, that'll never hurt you. There's no way that it could possibly ever come back to you in a negative, you know, way for doing the right thing. It doesn't work like that.
Sure. I like it. So that was the beginning. And how many years ago was that first purchase?
2013.
That's about 7 years ago. So, I mean, you mentioned, we were talking a bit, that you're up to 24 now. So after that first purchase, what was next, and how did you kind of scale your portfolio in a relatively short period of time?
So use the compounded revenue. 100% of my revenues were always reinvested back into my company. You know, I'm 37 years old now. I just brought my first new car like 2 years ago. People are like, I'm like, hey man, look, I live within my means, probably below my means. I do what I gotta do to make sure that I leave legacy here. Man, I'm not by any means, you know, that guy that's out here rocking Gucci, whatever. That's not my style. I'm more of an asset individual and I'm more of a legacy person. And, you know, I enjoy doing what I do, but, you know, if you budget correctly, it's obtainable. It's a lot of people who don't want to do it because it's the hard way to invest. It's way easier to just go and borrow, but you also have to give somebody a percentage of your money. And, I mean, I don't knock, you know, the Burr method, because that's the popular method nowadays out here. And, you know, by any means, you know, get to your finish line, however you have to get to your finish line. I just, you know, I'm the anomaly. I do what I got to do. And I like my method. I like the ownership method.
For sure. And so your next couple of purchases, were they also in the Newburgh area?
Yeah, my next few purchases after that were in Newburgh. You know, all foreclosures, all distressed properties, or required renovations, you know, some bigger than others, just went at it and just wanted another, got them rented, and just kept going with it, you know?
For sure. What kind of, so you mentioned that you kind of, you know, you do everything in-house, you do the rehabs, construction and such. So I guess for the next couple properties, what kind of cash did you have to put up just to get the whole job done? I'm sure, you know, it's probably a substantial cost to acquire and then, you know, make sure.
It's not. See, that's the key to it, man. You know, when I was buying, it was like Harlem in the 80s. So I was buying brownstones for $30,000. Yeah, bro. You see what I'm saying? So, and then fast forward, those same brownstones now are $300,000 and better. You see what I'm saying? So, it definitely changed in that short period of time. But in real estate, you have to be able to see the future. You got to have foresight. You got to be able to say, I see an emerging market. No one cares about it. I'm going to get on that. And that's what it was. It was a very high crime area. You know, at the time, Newburgh was the murder capital of New York. But it had and has some of the most amazing architecture in New York. Brownstones, row houses, riverfront Victorians, and it's right on the Hudson River. It was beautiful, but for 30K. So you tell me. You know what I mean? I wasn't... Yeah, so for, you know, the price of a Kia, I was able to buy a brownstone.
Wow. Now, that's saying a lot. And, you know, the hood, quote-unquote, gets a bad rap. And, I mean, a lot of people in our community are trying to just get out, never come back. But, you know, you see it all over social media. There's gold in the hood. And it's important for us to invest in our communities. And you have, you know, you saw what the future could be. You saw the assets that were in the community, regardless of what was happening. You saw that it was on the Hudson River. You saw the beautiful architecture. You saw what it could be. So I think it's great that you saw the future. You saw the potential and took advantage of it. And it seems like it's working out really well.
Yeah, my company's, you know, motto has always been from the beginning, the hashtag own your hood. If you hashtag me, there'll be thousands of pictures of just me, properties, all types of stuff. I've always been real big on it because people didn't care about it. Like, they saw it as a wasteland. They discarded it. And I saw it as opportunity, and not only just for myself, but to provide a better quality of living for the individuals that was there. And I mean, if you follow back on my Instagram, again, I used to do bathroom build-offs, super high-end, you know, 18-inch rain showers, and people are like, in the hood you're doing that? And I'm like, yeah, because guess what, bro? If you build a quality product and you give people something that they've never had, you may entice them to want better for themselves on different calibers of their life, not just in their housing. They might say, oh, you know what? You know, it's like you put on some new clothes and, like, you feel good about yourself. You know what I mean? Like, your whole everything is better. So, yes, why not? Like, what does it really cost you as a builder to go from the $4 shower head than to go on eBay and get the $30 shower head?
For sure. And speaking of, so I know you mentioned you project managed that first property. You know, how did your skill in rehabbing develop over time? Were you working with, like, mentors, or were you kind of just learning as you go? Because, you know, just looking on your page, I can see you do some, like, full gut jobs, and you bring them back to life. So we'd love to hear more about kind of your progression in that. And, you know, a lot of people are scared of rehabs and scared of gut jobs. And so I was, you know, since it seems like you know, you started from kind of not knowing much to seeing where you are now and how your properties look now. So we'd love to kind of hear you speak more about, you know, your evolution in that way.
So, yeah, man, that's a great question. So people ask me all the time, like, oh, do you come from, like, a family of builders and da, da, da. And I'm like, I have zero experience in building, zero. Like, we didn't even have a hammer in the house, right? But the cool part of this story is, so I had brought my second property and I ran into this gentleman named Giovanni Flores. And he was a Guatemalan guy, super nice. And we were talking one day and he had just started his own construction company. And I needed him to rehab this building. So we went through, we walked through it. He said, okay, fine, I'll do it, whatever, X amount of money. And I was like, all right, cool. I was like, here's the startup money. Like, call me when it's finished, right? Pretty much. Your man was like, what are you doing? And I was like, what? He was like, where are you going? I was like, I'm going home. And he was like, yeah, go home and put on some jeans and some boots and come back here. You're going to work. And I was like, I'm paying you. And he was like, absolutely not. He's like, I'm going to teach you how to do this. So when I'm not here no more, no one will ever be able to take advantage of you. That man taught me how to do roofing, how to do plumbing, how to run electrical, how to lay flooring, how to do sheetrock. Yo, I can build a house myself. He used to take me on jobs with him. He taught me how to bid jobs, how to bid out construction. He taught me how to hire subs. He taught me everything from the word go. And then that man left about 2 years ago and went back to his country in Guatemala. And he's still like, that's my brother, man. Like, he taught me everything about construction from the work. And today he's given me a skill that has, you know, allowed me to provide for myself, bro, and my family. Like, you know, it was something that no man ever gave me. So that's how that came about. A total stranger.
Wow, man. I think that is incredible. That is incredible that he, one, took an interest in you. And, you know, I'm just blown away, because people have different opinions of, you know, contractors and related trades. Because, and you, like you said, you hear horror stories of guys running off with money and taking advantage of people, but he was different. You know, he decided that, you know, he saw the future too. You know, he's like, I'm not going to be here forever. This brother needs to know how to take care of himself. And that's just, man, that is incredible. That is incredible that he took such an interest in you and made you self-sufficient and taught you how to fish. You know, he took you to the water.
Pretty much. Taught me how to fish. He taught me everything about construction. And it was so funny because he, you know, so now I'm going into my second building. He buys his first building. He's like, I don't know anything about these tenants. I'm like, I'm going to show you how to vet these tenants. You know what I mean? And it was like, he's a great man, bro. Like, you know, that was like something that like another man never gave me in my life. You know what I mean? Like a skill that I could take with myself. And because of that, it's so funny. I literally just took on my first intern and I'm showing him how to build gut rentals from the beginning. And he's going to learn plumbing, roofing, electrical, flooring, and all that good stuff. So, got to pass it on.
For sure, man. And so I know you mentioned also you have some properties out of state. So I know you started kind of in New York. What made you want to venture out and see what else was out there?
So as the Newburgh market started to increase and it deviated off of my path of my purchase prices, I started looking for emerging markets that had the same criteria as Newburgh and that people weren't paying attention to, and one of them was Cleveland. So I went into Cleveland about 3 years ago and I started buying properties there. I was buying, the only difference in Cleveland was I was buying completely rehabbed with tenants in it, buildings, multifamilies for 30K. So I was cashing, I was collecting rents at closing. You know what I mean?
Wow. So you were buying tenant occupied for quarters, basically.
Yeah.
Wow. That is crazy. That is crazy. So for the, How many units do you have in Cleveland?
Well, altogether it's 24, the entire portfolio. Out there, it's down to 3. I've started selling off because I'm tired of commuting. And it's so crazy, property values. So the Foresight, they have increased so much. So I was buying those properties for 27, 30. You know, turn around 1 year later, 2 years later, selling for 91. Because everything got, it just picked up. Everybody just caught on. And I was like, well, I already been here. I had already saw what was going to be. Started buying. And the next thing you know, I'm getting letters in the mail. I want to buy your property. I'm like, nobody wanted to buy stuff out here. But I was always real smart about it. You know, I always brought, in the better areas. And I always, like, looked at the, you know, how, like, the crime statistics. I would call the local precincts. I always did a lot of recon. I would go out on business trips and just recon for days and just, you know, drive through at night and see. Because I'd be like, hey, look, let's be honest. Like, what caliber of tenant wants to live in a certain crime-ridden area? And, you know, it's so funny about Cleveland is, like, one street will have no crime. And the next street is traffic houses everywhere. And you're like, but during the day, it's super quiet. You don't know no better. You got to drive through at night. So, you know, that's why I tell people you got to do your due diligence. I have people, you know, that consult with me, and I have a lot of clients that come to me about, you know, investments. I'm like, that absentee landlord stuff is garbage. Ain't nobody going to run your business like you, and ain't nobody going to care about your money like you. You got to get out there. You got to put that work in. It sucks. But you make some money. So
for sure. And were you self-managing the Cleveland once?
No. Actually, at a point, what I ended up doing was I hired a manager to manage everything, and I put him on the payroll and just did it outright. Because when you start looking at property management companies, I mean, I got my ideas about them, but you know, it's another topic. But I mean, it's a business. Like, let's just call it what it is. It's a business, and the business isn't based on the 10% monthly charges off of your rent. The business is based on service calls. That's how they make their money. So I mean, you know, they would love to come out for a run and toilet and charge you $200. You know, in all actuality, it's a $2 fix. So they will drain you if you allow them. So the best thing, the best idea that I came up with was to hire my own property manager, a skilled laborer, and just put him on the payroll. Just have him collect a percentage and just be responsible for that.
For sure. Very smart. How did you find that person to manage your Cleveland properties?
It was so crazy. Actually, when I started going out to Cleveland, I went out so often, like I started making friends. And I mean, the whole thing is networking. You know, you meet people, hey, you know, my cousin does this. My cousin, oh, okay, cool, blah, blah, blah. You know, and the next thing you know, it's, you know, you meet the guy, let me see some of your work. Oh, this is what I do. Okay, I'll give you a try, you know. And then when you build up that rapport, man, everything in business is relationships. That's the foundation. It's all relationships. How you conduct yourself and how you are. So if you have good relationships with people, which I pride myself on having and maintaining, bro, you really can't go wrong. You know what I mean? If you're not out here trying to get over on people, you're just doing the right thing. You know what I mean? One thing I'm very big on is making sure people get their money without never having to ask for it. I'm very big on paying because I'm very big on wanting what I paid for. And if you can do that and consistently and you become that person, trust me, people will come to you because you're known for being the guy to cut the check without nobody having to ask. So, yeah, that's how it went about.
For sure. I think it's interesting. I'm picking up on a trend here. So in the beginning, you got your first property and you helped your tenant move on to the next phase of their life, move on to, you know, you really held their hand and went out of your way to make sure that they were set up to buy their next property. And so I don't think it's a coincidence that, you know, the gentleman took you under his wing to show you all about construction. Mm. And then once you got to Cleveland, you found someone who you hired yourself to manage your properties. And so, you know, what I want to hammer into people is that, you know, you never, as we said before, a couple of minutes ago, you never lose out by giving to someone. It always comes back. You know, anything you give out always comes back. If you are trying to take advantage of people, if you're trying to, you know, cut corners, if you're trying to penny pinch, whatever you want to call it, and not do right by people, in return, mm-hmm. people are not going to do right by you. And, you know, I think the way you've conducted yourself up to this point is in a mindset of abundance. And it's coming back to you because you're putting good things out there.
Yeah. I mean, you know, my grandmother always told me, you know, just do unto others what you want others to do unto you. You do the right thing. You try and be a decent person. I mean, that's all you can really be in life. You know, everything else is just what it is. I mean, this stuff is, you know, it's cool. Real estate is fun. And it's a stressful job, but it's fun. But ultimately, it's a people business. And like I said, you're dealing with people's lives. So, you know, you got to be on the up and up, man. Like, you know, you got to. And for me, my company, NM Holdings, like, this is a brand. This is a legacy. Like, I take so much pride in my company's name because I set a standard of excellence for my company. And I wouldn't want my company to be perceived for anything less than what it is. So, you know, you got to just... stay consistent, man. Stay consistent.
For sure. Are you also in, what other city are you in? Is there another city that you do real estate in?
Yeah, Atlanta has a An Airbnb. So that's not a multifamily. That's just Airbnb. And then I got into the Airbnbs up here in New York. If you follow, I think like my two builds ago, the Airbnb house and stuff like that's where I'm actually at right now. Right. I'm actually filming in the Airbnb house. So
for sure. And Airbnb, of course, it's a hot thing this day. It's a hot thing these days. It's a hot topic these days. We haven't dived too much into Airbnb on the show. So I would love to just hear from you why you decided to do Airbnb, what your experience has been like, how it can be advantageous, all that good stuff.
So I think that it's more of a diversification on my part than a long-term strategy per se. I like design. So for me, this wouldn't be something that I would start a portfolio with. I prefer long-term tenants as a base for my company structure. And then if, you know, you have, the funds that you would like to invest, like, you know, like playing around with stocks and playing whatever. And like, this is what Airbnb is, because it's not a guaranteed revenue generator. You see what I'm saying? So at some point, some months it's a liability, and at some point, in some months it's an asset. So it's a variable. I think that for people who are owner occupants in the houses, then it's a win-win, because you were going to pay those bills anyway. You were going to make that mortgage payment regardless. But for some of the bills, like right now, like this house, like, you know, I came in tonight, it's empty. So that's $150 that just went out the window. So it's what it is. You know, you're still paying carrying costs, still paying for lights in here. I'm still paying for Wi-Fi. I'm still paying to heat this house. You know, we're in New York, so it's cold out here right now. So I'm still paying to heat this. You know, you still pay if it does snow for snow removal, lawn care, everything, you know. So I don't know. I have mixed feelings on it. But I think it's, hey man, look, it's part of the, it's part of the grind. If you want to play, you got to pay. And it's in some markets, it's definitely a win. You'll be booked all the time. In some markets, it's not. And like New York is a hit or miss type market. You know, it's not like like you got a Airbnb in Vegas or something like that. You know, where you're gonna be consistently booked. So, yeah.
How's the one in Atlanta doing?
That one performs. It performs. Atlanta performs all the time. That property definitely performs. But I would look at it from a point of view like, you know, I tried out in New York. But I have to, you know, there's a lot of variables. I did my market research prior to it. And I looked at what was around here, and there were Airbnbs. And it's because we have, because of our winters, that you have such a long downtime. And our winters are pretty frigid for about 5 months plus. I mean, you're from New York, you remember. So it's like literally 5 months out of your year. You know, when you start taking that into account, it's like, is it really worth it to have 5 months of downtime, you know, to try and hope to book out for the remainder of the year? And at what percentage are you going to book out? So it depends, you know, like in New York, the taxation here is pretty high. So, you know, when I'm paying taxes, school tax, property tax, water, garbage, lights, Wi-Fi, at some point, you know, it might not be so sustainable. So, right. You know, it's only been on the market here for about 45 days. I just finished the rehab here. This build is brand new. It's completely renovated. It's on the page. I walk people through it, and literally we knocked this out, and I acquired this property, I think, right before New Year's, so December 30th. We were finished with this by January 20th, complete rehab.
Wow.
We were out of this in under 30 days, I believe.
Yeah. Wow. So, yeah. Very cool, man. Very cool. And the one in Atlanta, are you managing that remotely, or is someone down there kind of keeping an eye on things and, you know, going in?
No, there's property. So there's companies that you use. I use third party companies that manage that stuff to do all of that. Gotcha. So it's like a property manager just for Airbnbs.
Oh, wow. So I didn't even know that. So there's like property management type companies specifically for Airbnbs.
Yeah, there's property management companies. They call them what do they call them? So it's like nightly rental management companies or something like that. They take a percentage of your nightly rate and they do all of your legwork for you. They literally have the cleaning crews. They send the cleaning crews an email prior for all the checkouts. The people come clean, do everything, blah, blah, blah. They restock with whatever materials you need. They send you an email that everything's been completed. The house has been locked up. You don't do anything.
Wow. That's perfect, man. That's perfect. Yes, interesting. What I like about the Airbnb model is that, you know, you can kind of ride it until this train ends. But when you own the property, you have options. You can just put a long-term tenant in there if the train ever ends or, you know, whatever. You might change your mind in 3, 4, 5 months about either one. And you can just put a tenant in there. So I think ownership gives you options. You can do what you want. You know, you could leave it vacant. You could Airbnb it. You could have a short-term tenant. You could have college students. You could have whoever you want in it. But the ownership piece, I think, is so significant because from that point, it's up to you what's done with the asset.
Oh, definitely. You know, I'm very big on adapting and overcome. So, you know, if the Airbnb doesn't produce for me in about 45 to 50 days, what are we going to do with it? Is it going to be something that's going to now be a full term? Is it going to be a flip and it's just going on the market for a sale? Or is this going to be a rental? For single families, I'm probably going to flip it. I would prefer, you know, to not even deal with another tenant, to just flip it. So, you know, I make sure that I purchase low anyway, so the profit margin is going to be there for me regardless. So, you know, you just got to always have an egg. You have to always, when you're looking at properties, just look at your out. Like, what's going to be your out in case things do go south? You know, every year, you know, you have to have a plan B at all times. You can't think that everything is just going to go the way, you know, you think it might. Like, I can do all the market, all the analytics I want and all the research I want. And at the end of the day, when I actually put it to the test, it doesn't produce, and then you know, I'm just not going to get stuck with something that I don't want. So yeah, you know, just make sure you have an out, and you know, have fun with it. You know, if it works out great, it works out great. If it doesn't work out great, make it work out great.
Sure, for sure. And that kind of leads into the next portion. So I want to know from your experience over the past 7 years, what advice you have in addition to what you just shared for novice investors, you know, people who maybe, you know, they don't know where to start, you know, they're interested in real estate, maybe they're scared. What are maybe two or three things or so you would say for somebody like that to focus on?
Number one, reach out to me and consult with me. I do a lot of coaching, but no, besides that, the main thing is don't follow the masses. You got a lot of people out here that own zero properties that are telling you how to own properties. That's like letting a bald person cut my hair. It's never gonna happen. You know what I mean? It's never gonna happen. You gotta look at where your mentorship is coming from. You have a lot of overnight gurus out here. Everybody's talking this, you know, scale up, and they don't have nothing. You know, they might have the book smart, but they can't apply it to the real world because they own nothing. So, you know, do your due diligence, make sure that who you're learning from actually has a portfolio, is tried and true, does this on the regular, and is a hands-on investor, not just a book investor or an absentee landlord, because they can't teach you nothing but how to lose your money. You know, another thing is don't get in over your head. I'm very big on growing organically. Let your company grow as it's supposed to grow. Do not force growth. When you force growth and you force things to happen, nothing good comes from it. Let everything evolve the way it's supposed to evolve. Take your time, evolve your portfolio. There's no rush. Like, this isn't a race. This is a marathon. Take your time, go nice and slow, get a nice stride, and just do how you like. People, you know, everybody wants to own 20 properties in 4 years. I have people that, you know, consult with me, and they're like, I'm like, oh, you know, one of the first questions I ask them is, what is your goals? And they're like, oh, I want to own 9 properties in 2 years. I'm like, all right, bro, like, let's be realistic about numbers here. Like, you're starting out the gate, like, you know, crawl. Because in all actuality, you don't even know if you're going to like this. because landlording ain't for everybody. You have to have the personality for this. You know, it's like me saying everybody's going to be a mortician. Everybody can't. It's not for everybody. It sounds good, and right now it's the trending topic, and it's what everybody wants to do. But just because everybody wants to do it doesn't mean everybody should do it, because a lot of people don't have patience for people, and this is a people business. So you got to have the mindset for it. You have to have the stomach for it. You got to be able to, and you have to be a very responsible person, because you're responsible for other people's living. You know what I mean? Like, not just for yourself. You have to be there's a lot of irresponsible people that want to be landlord. That doesn't mix, you know? So, yeah, I guess those are like kind of the few things, like growing organically and, you know, which is common sense, but don't over leverage. I know leveraging is the thing right now, and carrying debt is cool, but don't over leverage, because you're setting yourself up for failure, because this is a very volatile market that we're in right now. I personally don't borrow, but I do watch the market and I understand what's going on, and you don't want to get caught during a housing bubble burst. You know, we saw that before, and you don't want to be in too deep. Things happen, you all the way upside down, and now you're trying to figure out how to get from up underneath that, and you got to wait for a whole other cycle, and ain't nobody got 10 years of struggling to try and get their head back above water. So, you know, stay within your margins and watch your numbers.
Sure. And we spoke a bit about this off camera, but you mentioned that you left your 9-to-5 a couple of years ago to work on Yanam Holdings full time. So can you talk to us about a couple of things? So just about your 9-to-5 background overall, and also, you know, how you were able to kind of save and budget to get this thing rolling. And then lastly, what it felt like to finally walk away.
Well, okay. So, you know, prior to this, I was in law enforcement for 12 years. And then before that, I was a New York City EMT. So I've been a civil servant for approximately 19 years. So, you know, I also work with the public. So, you know, that gave me a better understanding of things. I think that I've always had the mindset, like when I was 18 and I became an EMT, I used to tell people I'll be retired at 35. Everybody laughed at me. They were like, nobody retires at 35. I was like, no, that's the number. I watched my grandparents work until they died. I was like, I'm not going to work until I die. It makes no sense. Why would I work forever to not enjoy it? Like, no, I'm going to be retired at 35. Everybody was like, yeah, whatever. So I always saved. I was a very big saver, you know, and then when I transitioned to law enforcement, I saved. You know, I always worked overtime. And like I said, I lived below my means. I didn't buy new cars. I didn't buy stupid stuff that served no purpose. And when I went, like I said, my first property at 203K, I had my down payment money. It was already there, you know. And then as I scaled up, the cool thing about that felt super good was the not needing part. The not needing someone to make sure that my family was okay. When I got to that point and I was, you know, making my salary in a month, and I was just sitting there like, I wish you would say something crazy. I'll leave right now. You know what I mean? That's really how it was. And literally, that's pretty much how it ended. Like, so I had told everybody, I said, I'm retired at 35. And I remember I was sitting there talking to this older officer, and I was like, I'm retired at 35. And he was like, shut up, kid. He goes, you're going to be here for 25 like the rest of us. You know what I mean? You sound stupid, this and third. Yeah. So when I was 35, the 25th of this year makes two years I've been retired, 37. To the 25th of this month, I'm sorry, this month. And I just, I don't know what happened. I can't remember, but I was just like, yeah, I'm good. I don't want to do it no more. And I was, you know, it was like my company was, I was so busy. I started calling out sick because I got tenant issues. I got this going on. You know, I got, you know, interviews with this and that. And I was like, man, I'm losing money coming here. But I was enjoying it. And then I remember like somebody did something one day I didn't like. And I was like, yeah, I'm going on vacation for like 30 something days, burn up on my vacation time. And then I just came back and they were like, what are you doing? I was like, oh, today's my last day. I'm retired. Like I already dropped off all my paperwork. Like I'm retired. And they were like, well, so yeah, I took early retirement. Like, I was like, I'm done.
Wow.
It was a mixed feeling because I thought I was going to be like super happy and all that. But in all actuality, like my partners and stuff, like I felt really like I was sad that day, man. Like I thought it was going to be like real happy as a run out. But then the next day I felt better. Like, you know, but like for that day when it happened, it wasn't that I was missing a job. I was missing the friends, you know what I mean? The you know, people I had worked with for so long. I missed that. It was scary, the thought of it, even leaving, even though I was making the money, it was still scaring me because, you know, I don't come from a family of entrepreneurs. I'm the first one. So it's not like this is what we do. You know, growing up, it was like, oh, we need more money in the house. Okay, somebody got to get a second job. Or we need more money in the house. Somebody got to work some overtime. It was never, we need more money. Somebody needs to create a passive stream of income. Like, that was never, no one ever even knew that that existed. So when it came time for me to leave, it was just, it was a little scary, but, you know, it was one day in front of the other. And the next thing I knew, I was at my 1 year anniversary because, you know, time flies. And next thing I was like, oh man, I'm retired for a year already. Now, 25th of May too. So.
That's powerful. I mean, That's powerful. And I'm sure it feels great just to know that you're building your legacy. You know, you're working for yourself, you're helping people out, and everything you do is going to make your family situation better. You know, you're not increasing somebody else's bottom line and so forth. And I think the way you've gone about it over the years, it seems like you were very intentional from the start, you know, from when you were much younger. Just kind of planning and saving, and you know, then the snowball has been rolling for all those years to take you to this point, and now you can even build and amplify your business even more now that you have the time.
Yeah, I knew this from the beginning. I said 35, man. Yo, I called it, bro. I called it. I was like, yo, at 35, and I walked out. I was like, yo, and I'm never one of them people that say, oh, speaking it to the universe, bro. Dude, that actually happened. I said 35 at 19 years old. At 35, I retired. Like, and I was like, wow, like I really spoke that into existence. I did that. I manifested that. And like, I whether it was consciously, subconsciously, I was studying. Because it's, you know, when you're doing it, it doesn't seem like you're doing a lot. But when you look back, you're like, wow, I did a lot. And at the time, I didn't really, you know, think that I was doing a lot. I just thought I was just, you know, creating some income. Who would have known, you know, later on down the road that this would become what it is, you know, and, you know, it just it turned into something really great and, you know, really, really, really optimistic for the future, super happy that it did happen. And, you know, the cool thing is, like, I tell people all the time, like, cause you know, all my coworkers now, they're like, show me the path, we gotta get out of here. You gotta tell them, I'm like, bro. I'm like, I was trying to tell y'all when I was at work. I used to be like, oh, you crazy. I was literally trying to tell everybody, yo, you should invest. You should do this. And they were like, man, you stupid. You're wasting your money. Oh, just go buy yourself a new truck. Okay. I was like, all right, bro. Now everybody miserable at 9 to 5. And I'm just like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You know,
but, yeah. And we spoke a bit about this off camera as well. Can you talk to us more about the show or documentary you were on, how that all came to fruition and what people can expect when that comes out?
So yeah, it's a docuseries. Malik Yoba, you know, from New York Undercover and all that cool stuff, had he reached out to me on Instagram, which was like all the way crazy, bro. Like I literally was sitting there one night, like, you know, I'm answering my DMs for the day because I get like a ton of messages, people ask me, you know, questions about their builds and landlording and, you know, just all types of questions all day long I get. And only in even time when things slow down, I answer them. And I got a message from Malik Yoba and he was like, what's up, young king? I've been following you and this and that, blah, blah. I'm like, yo, who's this scammer over here, like, using his account? And then I looked and I seen a little blue check. And I was like, so I clicked on the page and I was like, yo, it's Malik Yoba. Like Malik Yoba, like Malik Malik. You know what I mean? And I was like so hyped. And we started talking and he was like, I'm going to text you, blah, blah. And he was like, you know what, man, I'm just going to call you and we're going to talk. And next you know, he was like, hey, you know, I'm producing a docuseries called I Build New York. And he's like, it's about young black developers in New York that pretty much build New York. And he was like, I want you to be featured in it. And I was like, yes, like all the way yes, bro. And we started filming last summer and we wrapped it up towards the end of the summer. Towards the end of the summer, about to go into winter, and that was about it. So it should be coming out pretty soon. I just spoke to another day, and it should be out pretty soon. Cool event, cool, like everything. Everything's cool.
So we'll definitely promote that on the page and everything as you get more information. That's amazing, though, man. And then can you talk to us about, you mentioned like consults. So can you talk to us more about that and any other services your company provides that our listeners might be interested in?
Yeah, so I do a lot of one-on-one consult with, you know, coaching and stuff. As far as people, I do a lot of with existing landlords that run into issues that don't understand, you know, how to maneuver, whether it's going to be evictions or, you know, just landlord-tenant issues, contractor problems, renovation issues, design, how to build for whatever area they're trying to, you know, build into, market rates, rentals, caps, all that stuff. I speak with people about that. And I used to do the, like, classes, but I don't have time to really do it anymore. Now, like, if it's a case-on-case, like, someone wants to learn what I learned, like as far as walking through jobs, how to bid. That's the main question I get now is how to bid jobs. Because you have a lot of people now that want to become investors but don't know how to price out a bid. And a lot of people use hard money, so they don't know what the renovation cost should be versus what their purchase price is. And you don't want to overpay, or you don't want to, you know, pay too much where your profit margins are nothing if it's going to be on a flip. So, a lot of that I get questions about as far as bidding jobs. And, you know, sometimes if they're local, I'll have them shadow me and come walk through jobs. And they can learn that way. Because that's the only way you can really learn how to bid a job. I mean, there's books about it, but you can't learn how to bid a job unless you're actually on the job site looking at what you're looking at, you know. But a lot of it is all problem solving. So I have a lot of people that want to transition from a 9-to-5 to entrepreneurship, how to start their companies, how to structure their companies. They ask me questions about, you know, how to get started. Cause that's the main thing, is just how to get started. You know, like you're lost. You're going from a 9-to-5 where you just go to work, you do a mundane task, you go home, to actually having to structure a company, start it up, purchase real estate, get tenant, which is a business. You know, pretty much how to go from, you know, a worker to a business owner. And I show people that transition. So through my website, I offer consulting, you know, just YenumHoldingsLLC.com. So,
sure. And last question I have is, what does the future look like for Yenum Holdings? What are you envisioning next couple of years? Like, what do you hope to achieve?
So I want to do a lot more public speaking. I really love helping people and I love inspiring the masses. Like, you know, a lot of people, even on, you know, the commentary we had back and forth with I Build New York, you know, everybody was like, you're so relatable and you make it sound so obtainable. They're like, when I speak with other people, they make it sound so complicated. I'm like, it's nothing complicated. It's just hard work, bro. Like, if you want to put the hours in, you do anything long enough, it's going to work. That's just it. Like, you know, so, and I don't claim to be, you know, this person with all these degrees. No, I don't. I'm just an individual who works extremely hard and takes pride in their bill. So hopefully a lot more public speaking, a lot more speaking engagements, I had two so far this year, which I guess ain't bad, you know, but I'm catching on, and you know, I hope to do that and a lot more consulting, and eventually I'm probably gonna get into a little bit of light commercial. I want to start putting my finger into commercial and start seeing how that works. That's a whole nother beast. So I've been studying that recently, and maybe a little bit more commercial, you know.
Sure. And where can our listeners find you if they want to get in touch with you, if they want to contact you, talk more about what you have going on?
So definitely on my Instagram, which is Y-E-N-O-M, Yenom, which is money backwards, underscore. You didn't get that yet? Most people get. So it's Yenom, Y-E-N-O-M, underscore holdings, H-O-L-D-I-N-G-S, underscore LLC on Instagram. Or you can go to the website at www.yenomholdingsllc.com and reach out to me those ways.
Sure. Man, this was a dope interview. I think your story is just very powerful. It's very powerful. It's almost like everything added up. So just, you know, from starting your childhood, just making it to a home. And you know, when being asked, what is your fear? It's just being homeless. And you go from that to get into the working world and starting to invest 7 years ago. And it seems like everything just kind of went step by step, and just from paying it forward and helping people, like genuinely helping people, and that being returned back to you, to building to where you are now, leaving your 9-to-5 2 years ago, now being on a docu-series with Malik Yoba. You know, I can only imagine what the future looked like for you, brother. So, you know, I appreciate you coming on. You know, you have a great story, and I'm very, very much looking forward to putting this out, man. Really appreciate you taking some time.
Oh man, I really appreciate you reaching out to me. Like I said, you know, I feel like the story that I have is very relatable to a lot of people, because I come from nothing and I made something from nothing by myself. And I know a lot of us have that story, and they need to hear it, because it's doable. And I just hate that, you know, the narrative is always like, oh, you know, you're going to be behind the eight ball the rest of your life, where you don't have to be. You just have to change your mindset, your thinking, and what your goals are, and just be realistic about them, and just grow organically, and bro, everything will work out. Like, it will definitely work out. You just need to be very purposeful and intentful about what you're trying to do in life, and just, you know, just make it happen.
For sure. Thank you again, man. Thank you all for listening to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue podcast. You can find us on Instagram at Black Real Estate Dialogue, also on Twitter at Bread Podcast, at BRED Podcast. Look forward to connecting with you all soon.
Listen up, folks. Time could be running out to lock in a historic yield at Public.com. As of September 23rd, 2024, you can lock in a 6% or higher yield with a bond account. But here's the thing. The Federal Reserve just announced a big rate cut, and the plan is for more rate cuts this year and in 2025 as well. That's good news if you're looking to buy a home, but it might not be so good for the interest you earn on your cash. So, if you want to lock in a 6% or higher yield with a diversified portfolio of high yield and investment grade bonds, you might want to act fast. The good news? It only takes a couple of minutes to sign up at public.com. And once you lock in your yield, you can earn regular interest payments even as rates decline. Lock in a 6% or higher yield with a bond account at public.com. But hurry, your yield is not locked in until you invest. Brought to you by Public Investing, member FINRA and SIPC. Yield to worst is not guaranteed. Not an investment recommendation. All investing involves risk. Visit public.com/disclosures for more info.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.